Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Tonight, we begin a three-part Open House series on one of the big issues of our time, bullying. Of course, it's been around since humans have been around, but I don't think there's ever been a time when it's been more on the public radar and an issue in the workplace, in school, in media, social media especially, even at home. To take us through the issue over the next 3 weeks is a man who's thought long and hard about it all. Brett Murray is Australia's number one anti-bullying campaigner, a four-time Australian of the Year nominee. His latest book, Make Bullying History, is full of important research, evidence, and advice, and that's where we're heading over these next 3 weeks. You may also like to share your story of bullying with us. After all, that's where the rubber hits the road. If you're up to it, I think it'd be really important for you to tell us how this has worked out for you in your life. What happened, hopefully, what and how you got through it all. Give us a call, 1300 40 2020. Brett Murray, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks very much for having me.
I'm really grateful and I really look forward to an important series, Brett. In part one, we're going to look at some of the research, get a handle on what bullying actually is and what it's not. First, what got you interested in being an anti-bullying campaigner in the first place?
Well, the thing that got me interested was my own personal experience. I was chronically bullied at high school, the worst years of my life. I just couldn't wait to get out of school. So having that experience when I began speaking in schools professionally, pretty swiftly, I went from just doing careers advisory talks and teachers would say, look, you connect with the kids really well. Do you do anything on bullying? And of course, I had my own story. So yeah. I just said, yes, I do.
And Brett, what happened to you at school and why did it happen, do you reckon?
Back when I went to high school, divorce was not very prevalent. So I was one of the minority and only having a mum during those years of my life. I was very slim in build, so wasn't very strong. You know, I had a very low self-esteem at that point in my life, quite simply because, as research shows, that kids who don't have positive male role modelling or strong father figures in their lives tend to, you know, struggle in that area. So, you know, I was sort of living out the research, I suppose. So, yeah, kids saw me as an easy target. I was literally bashed every day, beat up. In between periods when we changed classes, kids would knock me to the ground and do pile-ups on me and everything, and that was a daily occurrence.
Just for the sake of it?
Just for the sake of it. I was an easy target, someone easy to pick on.
Were you able to, or did you fight back at all?
I wouldn't have fought back because the guys would have smashed me. I was so much smaller than everyone else. I was a very late developer physically, so that was sort of another Achilles heel. Boys in an all-boys school going through the journey of puberty, yeah. I was very, very late developer, so that was another target on my back, choir boy and all the sort of stuff they used to call me.
So is it primarily that you were small physically? Was that the big reason, do you think?
I think so. I think it was because, as we know, bullies, by definition, are cowards. They won't pick on anyone that they know that they can't defeat. So I was an easy target, an easy hit, and so it was just easy fodder for their play.
As it continued, did it get worse?
Well, hard to say. I think so, yeah. My final year, I've only been to year 10 at school, and it's quite strange now. I'm an international author and lecture at universities and everything now. Yep. Year 10 was the worst year of my life. It really was. I think it just culminated. I couldn't do or say anything right. Everything I did and said, people just utilised that as they would twist it. They would, you know, Brett Murray said this, oh, let's go and bash him. Oh, he said that, oh, let's go and bash him. Things were said that I never said. It was just hell. I hated going to school.
I have to ask, where were the teachers? Where were the principals? Where were some of your fellow students?
Well, the old bystander situation, everyone just watched. If they were friends, they didn't want to get picked on themselves, so they would just sort of stand back. You didn't tell the teachers because if you told the teachers, then you got bashed out of school because you're a dog, the common term used. So you sort of just had to put up with it, and I suppose my philosophy at the time was I can show them how tough I am by putting up with all the, you know, as much punishment as they want to dish out, I'll take.
And none of the teachers saw it?
No. Ironically, now as a professional youth communicator and anti-bullying campaigner, I speak to 40 to 50,000 students right around the nation every year, and I've spoken at many, many schools. And one of my old teachers happened to be a teacher at a school that I spoke at several years ago. And we had lunch together after I spoke at the school, and he was sitting in on the presentation and sharing my stories of being bullied and he sat down with me over a cup of coffee in the staff room, basically in tears, saying, "Mate, why didn't you tell us? If I had have known, I would have stepped in."
Yeah.
And I just said to him, "Well, you know, it was almost impossible because the culture at the school at the time was if you dobbed, you'd cop it,
yeah.
and there was nothing the teachers could have done." You know, and there's a lot of shame and guilt that are associated with victims of bullying. A lot of psychologists will tell you that the same shame and guilt that is associated with a victim of sexual abuse is the same shame and guilt that is associated with victims of bullying. Research that we did with McCrindle Research showed that 27% of kids who are being chronically bullied will not tell anyone because of the shame and guilt associated with it.
Did you tell your mum?
I did, but she would just say, "Oh, just walk away. Just walk away."
Yeah.
But unfortunately, at my school, if you just walked away, then they hit you in the back. It wasn't really nice.
Yeah. So the only way it stopped was for you to head out of school in year 10 as soon as you could.
Yeah, there was one time where there was one particular antagonist where I stood up to him and actually had a fight. And it was fight or flight. It was this guy just would not stop. And I turned around and actually swung a hit at him and sort of king hit him. But then he just kept coming at me. And so, because I wasn't very strong. So that was like, oh, you know, Brett Murray fights back. But then it just capitulated. So my only hope was to just get out of there.
How bad were you physically injured?
Oh, well, during winter, they used to have this fun game where they would come up behind me and pull my backpack around my arms and pin my arms to my body, and someone in front of me would come up and rub my ears really, really hard to make them sort of glow red.
Yeah.
And the skin would tear away from the skull and I'd be bleeding behind my ears. And so that would happen. Oh, I always had corked legs, corked arms, bruises, because they always hit you in the arms, in the ribs, always had sore ribs and everything. It was something that I just put up with. I just thought this was school life. This is what you do. This is how you toughen up.
You've obviously done a lot of thinking with the book and research into it. How do you now reflect on how you're affected, not only physically but psychologically, in the years ahead after year 10, after you left school?
Well, I can now see, I mean, hindsight is 2020, and obviously being in the, I suppose, the field that I'm in when it comes to studying human behaviour and helping others overcome adversity, I've realised that it had massive adverse effects on my life, particularly straight out of school. Even as a Christian, you know, my relationship with God was affected because I didn't have my dad there. I mean, my dad and I get on unreal now. We've rebuilt the relationship, and we really are an example that if something doesn't start out crash hot, it doesn't have to stay that way. We've really sown in a lot of time, effort, and energy, and my dad and I get on brilliantly now.
Fabulous.
So that's a great end of the story. But during those times when my dad wasn't present in my life, from the years of 11 to 18, I didn't see my dad, hear from my dad at all. So struggling with what it was to have a father figure really impacted on my life as a Christian. I got saved when I was 16, just fresh out of school. So that was a saving grace, though. That was a turning point.
I'm sure.
Straight out of school, got saved, and then realized, hang on a minute, I've got value, I've got purpose, I've got hope. But still, the scars remained. Was I worth listening to? Did I have value? Did I count? Did I matter? These sorts of things had to slowly be sown into me because, you know, 15, 16 years of learned behaviour of, you know, you're the punching bag for everyone else has to be unlearned, and it doesn't happen overnight.
They were questions played out in your head. How did they play out practically in your life as you left school, got into the workforce and quite literally grew up?
Oh, well, a lot of the areas like lack of self-worth and self-esteem, you're always trying to prove yourself. Surfing was one thing that I really loved and adored and still surf now. I would go into competitions and do my best to win, not for the sake of winning, but to prove to everyone I could do something. I got into boxing to prove that I could actually look after myself. And ironically, the first fight I ever had as an amateur, I got knocked out cold. So that's sort of...
Good one.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I turned it around and thank God I became a state champion in that sport. It was more
it's full of irony.
It is, yes. But I was more in the ring fighting against myself, fighting against the self doubt and the unbelief that sure you've trained hard, but are you good enough? And that nagging question: do I have what it takes?
So you start off the book in a great way by unpacking the word bullying. Tell us the intellectual definition of it and the emotional definition of it.
Oh well, the intellectual definition of bullying is. Or bullying is long-term, ongoing violence, threats of violence or antagonisation.
Okay.
And the key word is long-term and ongoing, those two key words. I suppose the emotional side of bullying is people think fear, monster, control, power, abuse. So there's the emotional side of things where people equate bullying to their own personal experience, and the intellectual definition, which I think is very important that people need to understand what bullying is and what it is not.
Yes, that's right. That's what I wanted to explore. Mm. So when does long-term begin? How long does it have to be before it slips into that category?
I would say anything over 2 weeks. So if there is any situation, whether it's at school or at work, you know, from the classroom to the boardroom, it happens right across the spectrum. If someone is antagonizing you, picking on you, rejecting you, ostracizing you, even intimidating you, if it happens sort of once or twice in a week and then never happens again, it's like, well, you can realize maybe someone's had something going on in their life and they're just sort of, as we say, acting out in a negative way. But if someone is starting to continue this behavior, happens for a couple of days in 1 week and then happens a couple of days the next week and then the following week, you can say then you're being bullied.
It has to be said in the workplace. Mm. That's not legal anymore.
No, it's not.
It's actually against the law.
Yeah, it's classed as harassment. But ironically, statistics show that Fair Work Australia, the organisation that is supposed to be the referee for workplace disputes, 40% of all of their staff have actually submitted official workplace bullying complaints, and the average out-of-court settlement is $27,000.
Wow.
So it's happening right across the board.
Okay, so let's go to what bullying isn't. Are there lines you can draw that distinguish it from, say, the usual argy-bargy that people engage in situations of conflict?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the classic, analogy that I draw when I'm sharing with kids, if a bigger, older student happens to push someone out of line in the tuck shop, you know, they're going for recess and they say, get out of the way, I'm in here, and they push in line. That's not bullying. That's just someone being selfish, obnoxious, vicious, malicious, not condonable, but it's just horrible behaviour. Yes. But if that person does that continually, when we're talking, you know, week in, week out, day in, day out, over a long period of time, as we said, over a fortnight, and it continues on, term in, term out, then that's bullying. So identifying the difference. If someone's just being nasty and they push you out of line, well, then that's horrible and it should not be condoned and, you know, needs to be disciplined appropriately. But if they just do it once, well, then that's just someone being, you know, as I say, someone being stupid. But if they're continually doing it and they're a repeat antagonist, well, then that needs to be addressed because there's a major issue there.
You've looked at the why it happens, and in your case, it was primarily or significantly your size.
Yeah.
Why else do people bully?
Well, the number one common denominator and contributing factor to bullies is low self-esteem or poor self-worth.
In their lives.
In their lives, yeah. As many people have shown, there's many comments around there and commentaries that bullying speaks more about the bully than it does the victim.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking bullies, they're people who have a poor self-esteem, poor self-worth, and as the saying goes, hurt people hurt people. If they've only ever been hurt, they've not been reassured, they've not been validated at home, then they're going to try and get that validation elsewhere. And if they're coming from a situation where, when it comes to fathers, fathers are a major contributing factor. It has been proven unequivocally now through research right around the world that the number one impactor on your self-esteem or self-worth, male or female, is your dad. So kids with poor self-esteem and poor self-worth either have a fractured, a dysfunctional or non-existent relationship with their father.
Or being bullied themselves, either at home or
absolutely
at school.
Yeah, they could be a victim. I mean, 49% of students that we researched, they bullied because they were being bullied and they didn't want to be the bottom of the social pecking order, so they picked on someone else.
Brett, what else did the research find?
Well, the big thing that really shocked me was 63% of all Australian school students at high school have been bullied. That's after they've done one of my four-hour seminars. They are acutely aware of what bullying is and is not.
Yes.
And then we've asked them, okay, have you been bullied? 63% of school students that we surveyed said that they'd been bullied. Now, this is not just a small test group. This is over 3,000 students over 12 months.
Girls and boys.
Yes, private and public schools, you know, from years ranging from year 7 right through to year 12.
Does one gender predominate?
No, we found it was fairly balanced. The ways in which boys and girls get bullied varies, but no, it was pretty much an even 50-50 split right down the middle.
Did some of the research shock you? As one who has done so much work on it, who's gone through it so intensely yourself, were you still shocked by some of it?
The thing that I was shocked most was how little kids share when they're being bullied. That was the only thing that really shocked me, that they wouldn't tell anyone, particularly with the amount of attention that bullying is receiving now in the media over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. Yeah. It's really become predominant in the media, but kids still won't tell anyone. 38% tell their parents, 36% tell their peers, 27% tell their school. So we're talking, you know, less than half of kids who are being bullied will actually tell anyone. The biggest group of people that they trust is their parents, and that's only 38%. Then they tell their peers and friends, 27%, so less than a third will actually let the school know it's happening, because bullies never attack someone at school in front of an authority figure, a parent or a teacher. So a lot of parents say, well, the schools aren't doing anything about it, but bullies are very clever. They won't do it in front of the teachers. So how do the teachers know it's actually happening? Because they're not going to bully someone in the middle of class. It'll be around the corner of the building when the teacher's off on the other end of the playground during recess and lunch and that sort of thing. Yeah, and the big statistic was 27% don't tell anyone.
A lot of it's fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love you to tell us the story on which you base your book. That's right. A very powerful story.
That is the story of the two boys that became world famous right around the world for the YouTube clip of the young boy who is the bully and the bigger boy who then decides to snap and fight back. I actually got to interview the young boy who was the bully in the story. Everyone knows the YouTube clip I'm talking about, yeah, where the bully king hits the bigger guy and the bigger guy sort of wants to walk away and the bully goes to have another hit and the victim snaps, grabs him, picks him up in big body slam and almost nearly kills him.
It went viral.
Yeah. Video games were made of it and all that sort of stuff. But the sad reality was that the boy who was set up as the bully was actually not a bully. And this might become a shock to most people, but he grew up in a household. I've met both of his parents. They're divorced. You know, it wasn't a very conducive environment to love and care and concern. A lot of substance abuse in the household. The little boy, he was in year 7 at the time last year, 12 years old, very little, suffering from fetal alcohol syndrome. Yeah, you'd quite obviously see it when you met him and talk with him. And he was tiny. He'd be lucky if he weighed 40 kilos. There was a group of antagonists that were picking on the bigger boy for years. Now, the bigger boy's in year 10. So he's had 3 to 4 years of long-term ongoing violence. He had actually submitted over 70 incident reports to his school. And so he was a victim. The boys who were the perpetrators thought that at the beginning of the school year last year, it would be fun to see if we can get the littlest kid in the school to come and bash the big boy that we like picking on. So they swarm around the young boy, they befriend him, and they give him the positive male role modelling that he's drastically lacking at home. This boy has never hit anyone before in his life, never needed to. He's just always been the sort of class clown, and everyone kind of likes him, and he's funny and witty. And all of a sudden, he's surrounded by older guys. Now, when you're in year 7 and you walk into high school and the older year 10 students, who in your eyes are men, befriend you, you think, wow, I've made it. You know, I've had this rite of passage. I'm now in the grown-up world. And so for 2 weeks, they're befriending him and treating him like their best mate. And then they say, right, now's your time for initiation. For you to actually be part of the group, see that kid over there? And they point to the victim. They say, you need to king hit him. And so for another 2 weeks, he's like, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't know this guy. He hasn't done anything to me. And they say, well, if you don't bash him, we're going to bash you. And so the very next day, it's morning, they grab his phone off him. They said, we're going to film this. Here he comes. Here's your chance. And the rest is history.
It's so tribal,
yeah,
and so organised.
Oh, it was.
To an extent that shocks me.
Yeah. I spoke to the deputy principal of that school, sat down and interviewed him, and he said, oh, this is a minor incident compared to what happens at this school. It just happened to be videoed.
Wow.
It was just horrific. You know, he was labelled as the worst bully on the face of the planet. He's never hit anyone before that time or since.
So it's a well-known story.
Yeah.
But what did you, as an expert and an author on this, take out of it?
Well, the big thing I thought was that people, I suppose they understand bullying to be what the media feeds them. And, you know, there's always a story behind every perpetrator as well.
Yes.
And we need to take time out to understand, well, why is that person behaving like they are? And that's one thing that I suppose has set me apart from most other awareness campaigns, is I've always sort of thought, okay, there's two sides to this story. There is the victim, yes, and we need to look after them and protect them and teach them resilience and strength and tenacity and that sort of thing and value them. But the bully is just as hurt, if not more hurt. And so we need to get into their lives because they're the one perpetrating this horrible behavior. How do we stop it in them? And the way to do that is to get down to the core root of it, which is lack of self-esteem and poor self-worth. And that stemming from poor male role modeling, lack of fatherhood. So if I can be that positive male role model in their life, and even if it's for one day, speak life into them, it's amazing the impact you can have by just grabbing their attention, sharing with them your own story of adversity, and then instilling into them what they really are worth.
Brett Murray, this conversation proves why this is such an important conversation to have. Next week, we're going to delve into the bullies and the victims deeper in our conversation with Brett. He's the author of Make Bullying History. Brett, look forward to our conversation next week. Thanks very much for joining us on Open House.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.